This commemorative version of Earthwatch was produced by Catherine Davis and Paulette Spencer. The concluding songs were Bob Dylan, Masters of War, Labri Soufri, Something Inside So Strong, and John Lennon, Gimme Some Truth.
Well, Catherine and all, we ended about a minute early, it would seem. Catching me, I won't say with my pants down, that would not bode well. But catching me slightly unawares, but what else is new, Jim being unawares? But I will tell you that this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And, oh, like 30 seconds more to fill. I can't... the fun drive is over for this week. You know, there'll probably be another one like in a month or something like that. So I can't pitch. Oh, I know what to say. Pay your pledges. That's it. If you called to support WBAI, to keep, you know, listener-sponsored radio alive and broadcasting, and we hope that you all did, then pay your pledge. Or we'll have to howl. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a non-marathon, fun drive, non-memorial edition, although we've lost people again. But not personal friends for a change. At any rate, this is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Our guest this morning, Sam J. Miller. And of course, we're going to find out from Dan Persons, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles worth a dime? Stay tuned.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Let me begin my discussion of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by describing a moment from Guardians of the Galaxy. Sometime past the halfway point, one of the members of the Bad Guys Reluctantly Doing Good Stuff team, Rocket, a CG animated raccoon, delivers a brief monologue where he expresses his anger and frustration at the treatment he's received at the hands of the other characters. It's a surprisingly effective moment, using a combination of believable CG animation, good voice work by Bradley Cooper, and some nice writing by director and writer James Gunn and his partner Nicole Perlman to bring depth and credibility to this little character. Towards the end of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, one of the CG animated turtles, I don't know which one, I don't care, delivers a speech as the team faces certain death about how much he loves and admires his brothers. It goes on and serves only as an obvious setup for a very predictable punchline, one made worse by the fact that the gag is pretty much bungled by director Jonathan Liebesman. And that's the way it goes for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The film has been poorly served by being released following Guardians of the Galaxy. Not that opinions of it would be any better had it hit the screens at some other time. It'd always be a mediocre film. It's just that coming out in close proximity to Guardians casts Turtles' deficiencies in sharp relief. Basically, both films are the same in their humble intent. Provide a couple of hours of action-packed entertainment, nothing more, nothing less. It's just that whatever Turtles tries, Guardians has done smarter, wittier, and more creatively. I'm wondering if part of the reason for that is that Guardians director James Gunn is also its co-writer, and a pretty good one at that. He has the confidence to connect the film's action mandate with his own skills in sculpting character and bringing a unique outlook to a very standard Find the MacGuffin plot. Turtles director Liebesman was responsible for the similarly disposable Wrath of the Titans and the actually not too bad Battle Los Angeles, but here turns writing duties over to other people and is working in the Michael Bay feature factory and all of the characteristics of the Bay brand of filmmaking attach: the pointless, vertiginous camera moves, the nearly incomprehensible action sequences, CG character animation that's at once elaborate and not particularly pleasurable to watch, and an approach to storytelling that downplays the need for any kind of writing that might rise above the cliche. Amazingly, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has even less of a plot than Guardians of the Galaxy. Its title almost is the plot, and its characters aren't anything to talk about. There are differentiations to the turtles, but they don't really stick. And as for the human players, Megan Fox brings the same commitment and credibility to her role as video journalist April O'Neil as she did to her role as an auto enthusiast in the Transformers films, while Will Arnett and William Fichtner do what they usually do, which is at least something. There's nothing horrendously bad about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's just more pap out of the Michael Bay supposed-to-be-fun factory. If you've already seen Guardians of the Galaxy and need another summertime action fix, why don't you see Guardians of the Galaxy again? I'm not rushing back for a second viewing myself, but I've no doubt that if I went in for another go, it would still deliver more entertainment and surprises than my first viewing of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at the Cinefantastique Online website. Catch up on what you missed by going to cfqonline.com.
Thank you, Dan. That was a worthy review. I'm so pleased that you didn't like it. I was just telling our guest, Sam J. Miller, and I didn't finish the story off here, so I'll finish it on air, as catharsis after learning of the death of another beloved BAI person, Steve Post. My partner Barbara and I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy, which, by the way, rocks. I mean, we just loved it. And by the way, you must stay for the end post-credit.
We always do.
Yeah.
We always do.
But this one is not Samuel Jackson.
Okay.
it is a total spoiler.
Great.
To say what it is. It's just, this one may be the best of them all for its obscurity and wonderment and the willingness to delve into the more obscure corners of the Marvel world.
Sounds fascinating.
Well, if you're reading the comics in the era, I never read Guardians of the Galaxy, but there were other comics at that same time, and this involves one of them. At any rate, we went to see Guardians of the Galaxy as catharsis for all these people, beloved people dying. And by the way, it worked. Really, really mood-altering, uplifting.
Great.
All of that stuff. But the thing that gave us pause is going into the theater and the person at the ticket booth saying, "Are you a senior?"
Aww.
Wait, that's not the bad part. The bad part is, okay, I just turned 60. It turned out that I am. And given the prices, we got in for a mere $17 instead of like $25.
Yeah.
But both Barbara and I got in as seniors right when we're mourning a close friend who was 67 and another who was 70. Steve Post was 70. And before that, this woman, Carolyn Fireside, who is not well-known, but she worked at NAL. She helped launch the careers of Terry Bisson and David Hartwell and all that. She was a terror. She was an impossible woman, but she was our friend.
Right.
And so she started this whole thing. She died about prematurely. She was 73 about 7 weeks ago. And
I'm sorry.
And that just, you know, so.
Well, at least you got a movie discount. You know, and in New York City, we take what we can get.
At least Lauren Bacall was 89. You know, these, but most of these other people, yeah, and James Garner was 86.
Sure.
But all these other people were taken too early. But you're a kid.
I'm a kid.
This is
it's
your
good of you to say that.
This is, well, may I?
You may, of course. Please.
How many? How many birthdays have you had?
I'm 35.
You're a semi-kid.
I'll take it. I'll take kid. When now I used to be upset when people called me a kid. Now I'm really happy.
So yeah, exactly.
I'll take it.
And if anybody, and if I were to dye my hair the way that you have, or more sensibly or something, I could probably, I've always looked much younger than I am. And except for the hair, I probably, to an extent, still do.
We should try it sometime. We should style you up and take you out on the town.
Ooh, I don't know about
that. See what people say.
I think it would freak Barbara out. But on the other hand, there is a temptation. There really is. But this is Sam J. Miller's third time on the radio show, but there's a big difference. The first time on, you hadn't yet... Had you published a short story? I think the story you read on the air when you were on with Jen Brissett.
So
the wonderful. She's legally changed her name to the wonderful. You've also legally changed
I would co-sign that change of her name because she is indeed the wonderful. I had never made a science fiction or I had never made a genre sale before.
Okay.
When I first appeared
mostly
on
Howl of the Wolf.
No, I've been publishing for a while, but mostly literary fiction or sort of more conventional mainstream stuff.
Okay.
Although I've always been interested in genre, and I've published genre stories, but in mainstream outlets.
See, I've a long time ago I stopped separating them. I had a guy on the air, writer and editor by the name of James Baker, who I'd seen at KGB, and he's the editor of Real Simple magazine. That's a major magazine. He's the editor, and he came on the air and he read a fabulous, great short story, and it had a lot of strange elements to it, and if you like genre, you love the story. And somebody called up and said, was that science fiction or mystery or anything? And the answer was, did you like
right.
it?
Exactly.
And well, yeah, it was quite good. I said, thank you. On to the next question.
Yes. No, the genre labels.
So I don't, you know.
They're not particularly helpful unless one wants to sell books, I guess.
It's a marketing phrase. It's
exactly.
A marketing. I mean, I call this a science fiction program when I talk about Tolkien.
Right.
Yeah, you know, right. It's the Damon Knight definition of science fiction is, I say this almost every week, science fiction is what I'm pointing at.
There you go.
It's and
like
that,
the Supreme Court and pornography. I know it when I see it.
And how do you know? And Justice, was it, which? It was one of the greats. It was one of the greats of the Supreme Court. There haven't been that many. And he they said, how do you know? And he said, it gave me an erection.
I didn't know that follow-up.
Oh, yeah.
Part,
oh, yeah. You only had half the story there.
Yeah.
I'm
no,
surprised.
When I first appeared on Hour of the Wolf in December of 2012, I had not yet made a pro sale. And the story that I read, Kenneth, the user's manual, is actually coming out in December on World AIDS Day, on December 1st of this year, from Strange Horizons.
What? Shows my ignorance. I didn't know there was a World AIDS Day.
There is. There is, December 1st.
Okay, and is that recognized throughout the world?
Yep, yep. So the story deals with a sort of artificial intelligence virtual man construct named Kenneth, who encapsulates the HIV/AIDS crisis in a future time when there is no such thing. And so the story is going to be published by Strange Horizons on World AIDS Day.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's a fun,
one of the great things about the digital revolution is that you can actually publish something on a day.
Exactly.
And it matters. It makes a difference.
Exactly.
And then the last time you were on the show was a solo, right?
No, I was joined by Tempest Bradford and John Klima, long distance.
That was just before that memorial.
Right, in February of 2014.
But at that point, that's right. I've got some great photos, by the way, of that event you produced at Blue Stockings.
Yes. Yeah, so that was in February. We organized a memorial service for the late lamented, wonderful...
The magazine is what died.
That's correct.
No people were harmed.
All associated humans are still being wonderful. Making wonderful things.
I actually, and I think I said this on the air, I objected and still do to calling it a memorial and saying that it's dead. I would say call it a tribute.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And it actually, there is a Best of Electrovelocipede anthology coming out shortly that has a story by me in it and by tons of other amazing writers. So it is alive and well.
I believe Barbara is in that
wonderful.
As well.
Wonderful.
Barbara Krasnoff, listeners. I generally don't say her name, but...
Well, it's late. We'll make an exception.
Yeah, well, yeah it's late except those people who are listening to the... on-demand version.
Got it.
Because this is available
Foiled
for
again.
A while.
Right.
But
right. No, so this is my third appearance and my first solo.
Your first solo. Very good. But it was... I think it was about January that I am now the audio editor of Lightspeed Magazine. And I'm now the host. At the time, the host was the wonderful Jack Kincaid, who's still the host of Nightmare Magazine, for which I am the audio editor. Now, John Joseph Adams is the editor of the magazine, and Skyboat Media produces the readings. They make the readings. But unlike Punch and Roll, these are done by actors.
Correct.
This is unlike Clark's World, where Kate Baker is one of the most fabulous hosts and readers and narrators in the world.
Agreed.
But you know what I think? I think that she is like what I do here. I listen to her, and I listen to her talk about what Neil Clark is up to and this and that. And you know, she sounds like, and she was on the show a month ago, and I told her this on the air, with her two daughters. Oh, God, they're wonderful. And by the way, if any of you young ladies are listening, I want movie reviews from you. I'm dead movie and book reviews. We need some youth on the air here. The Sam at 35 is probably the youngest person who graced these studios in years. Anyway,
I'll take it.
Kate is like a talk show host. You get this intimacy.
Correct.
And a professional reading. She reminds me of Margot Adler, the way that she conducts herself, and this wonderful, intimate kind of thing. And she narrates her stories and she performs. That's one style. Then there's another style, the style of, I call them readers as opposed to narrators. These are actors.
Performers.
Yeah. And the last story that I did not host, and was Nightmare Magazine anyway, was Nightmare Lightspeed.
Nightmare published my story, 57.
It was Nightmare. Okay. So I would not have hosted it because Jack and Kate first said, Jim, take over. And then he said, you know, I created this. I'd like to continue hosting it. And he can do it like that. I'm still learning my way around, although I think I finally found my voice. And by the way, everybody, this week's story is this wonderful arabesque fantasy by, oh my God, he's 16.
Stop it.
Tamid Shafiq is his name.
Oh, I saw that story and I downloaded it because it looked really good. So I'm excited to check it out. I did not know that the person was 16.
It took me about 6 days because it's a 35-page story. It runs an hour. The reading is an hour, 20 minutes, and 33 seconds, I happen to know.
Wow.
But I've actually, I think, found my voice. And, oh, my God, the pronunciations I had to do on that. But, I got them correct. I did not know it was Qatar. I thought it was Qatar. It's
now,
Qatar.
Now you know.
Now I know, because, anyway. So I got to edit a story read by Paul Boehmer, B-O-E-H-M-E-R, called 57 Reasons for the Suicides.
Slate Quarry Suicides.
For the Lake Quarry Suicides. A dynamite story. And I, by the way, am not one for horror. But this is not the visceral kind of horror.
Agreed.
This is, what, a weird tale horror? I mean, if one thought of horror, one would think of a story like, oh, let's say, The Lottery. One of the best horror stories ever written.
Right.
I mean, there's also Turn of the Screw.
Sure.
Literary horror. So, I mean, some of this is some of the best.
Yes.
Which is why Sam J. Miller has since changed his name legally.
The paperwork's still going through. I don't know if it's going to fit on my driver's license.
Yeah, or your marriage license.
That's correct.
And I don't know that your husband wants to change, but it's your first name that
That's
you're
right.
changing.
That's right. He rolls his eyes at the whole thing, but he's fine with it. No, I joked that I was going to have my name legally changed to Shirley Jackson Award-winning author Sam J. Miller.
Well, I mean, that's a bleeping thrill.
It is a thrill. I was quite shocked to be nominated and double shocked to win. So
this was at ReaderCon at the beginning of last month.
Yes.
And I missed much of the awards.
So did I. I was sitting there.
I had a panel.
Okay.
That went into the half hour mark. And after the panel, there was nothing else in that room. And no, it wasn't a panel. It was Barbara Krasnoff, followed by D.T. Friedman reading.
Yes.
And I was filming and recording it.
We were very sad that we were up against each other.
That's right.
We could not be present for each other's moments.
And we were talking and hanging out in the room, and all of a sudden I got, oh, my God, the Shirley Jackson Awards are being given, and Sam is up for it. And somehow I had not seen Veronica Shaness, the wonderful, the lovely, the CUNY professor.
Brilliant,
Professor
yes.
Shaness, as she is properly called.
Yes.
who I believe will be on the show in 2 weeks.
Great.
She's reading at KGB, Fantastic Fiction Reading Series, a week from what was tonight, Wednesday night, right, at 7 o'clock at... help me on the address.
East 4th Street.
It's on East 4th Street. You look for the sign that says KGB Bar. You go to the second floor.
Look for the comic. Stop when you get to the commie propaganda.
It's free admission. It's wonderful. Veronica Shaness and the fabulous Karen Hewler, who has a relatively new book out.
Great.
That is incredible. And she'll be on this show again. She hasn't been on in a while.
Great.
And I would have had her at a Nearsif reading if it wasn't for the fact that we have a don't step on each other's toes agreement. I am the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, and they are the KGB Fantastic Fiction,
yes,
readings. At any rate, I walk in. And as I walk in, I see Veronica standing on the stage crying. and I'm holding the Shirley Jackson Award. And I did not sit down or anything. I went up to the stage just as she was coming off and just gave her a hug. And I thought, I haven't seen Sam. Where is he? I'm going to have to give him condolences.
Fortunately, we are in separate categories.
You were in a tough category. You had some serious competition.
I did.
Who were the other nominees?
Maria Devana Headley, who I was... we were both very excited to be nominated and very sad to be up against each other, because
yeah,
we both love each other's work in general and each other's stories that were nominated. So that was very sad. But there were the other nominees were Livia Llewellyn, Paul Park,
who will be reading for Nearsif in October.
Wonderful. I will be there. Robert Shearman, and one other person who I'm a terrible person because I forget.
But you're in darn good company.
It was an excellent lineup.
And so I finally we're getting ready to leave. It's Sunday morning or early afternoon, and it's a long drive to New York from what's basically Boston, Burlington, Mass. It's just outside of Boston. And then I see Sam, and I'm going to go and give him a hug and condolences for not winning.
And then you saw the giant chunk of loose.
I got the hug, proudly, and I got spiked in the stomach by a Shirley Jackson Award that you were holding.
Yeah.
To which I say, far bleeping out.
And I was happy to see you.
Yes,
thank you.
That was a thrill for me.
There was a thrill
to see that you won.
It was a thrill for me too, and I'm happy to say that I did keep it together and I didn't start crying until after I sat back down. When I accepted the award, my knees were shaking significantly, but I think it looked pretty good from the audience.
Did you have notes?
I did just have a list of people that I wanted to make sure to thank.
Good.
Which was really smart, because it is true what they say.
Did you include your agent?
I
used to work for various agents.
Yeah, well, now...
Never mind.
Now I owe more apologies, Jim. Thank you.
Whoops.
No, there were a couple people who I did leave off.
Everybody listening, if you're an actor, if you're a writer, if you're an artist, remember your agent.
Yes.
Or manager, if you're in Hollywood.
Good advice. No, but there is video of my acceptance speech, and I do actually look like I am not about to pass out or throw up, which when both of those things were
But winning that award, when your career as a genre writer is just beginning, did you set out to write horror?
No, what's interesting is that I had submitted the story to Lightspeed, and they felt like it would be a better fit for Nightmare, which I love them both and was honored, of course, to be published under any circumstances. But I hadn't thought of it as horror as I was writing it. And
I didn't think of it as horror as I was doing the audio edit of Paul Bamer's reading. A good reading, I thought.
It was a good reading, although I wouldn't know because I can't actually listen to it.
Yeah.
It's too...
I have compared you and Matt Kressel.
Oh.
Matt Kressel heard a Lightspeed reading. This is before I was the editor. Uh-huh. This is when Raj...
Rajan Khanna?
Thank you. Rajan Khanna, Raj Khanna, was the editor at the time. And Stefan Rutnicki, who produces for Skyboat Media, he and Gabrielle DeCure are the producers. Stefan did that reading, and Matt said that when he heard that reading, it was like the first time he had actually heard the voices, and now he knew what they sounded like. And you, your reaction when I spoke to you,
I said it was like hearing somebody else read my thoughts.
Yeah,
and it was too
disturbing. These voices were in your head.
Exactly. It was too disturbing for me, and I couldn't listen. Although I can objectively state he did a fine job, and other people who I know who've listened to it said it was wonderful.
It was a great reading. It really was. And by the way, folks, still online at nightmare-magazine.com.
Yep. And my website, samjmiller.com.
You'll have links to the reading?
Links to it, yep.
Yeah, very good.
So yeah, I didn't think of it as horror, but I think that's the interesting thing you mentioned before, that genre labels are largely meaningless. I think they really are largely in the ear of the beholder, that horror is different things to different people, and that what I find horrifying might not be what someone else finds horrifying, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So while I had thought of it more as a sort of dark fantasy, semi-science fiction.
I would have called it semi-science fiction. I would call it a weird tale.
It's in a weird sort of intergenre wasteland.
And it's not even the new weird, as the Vandermeers like to call it. It's weird, and in the grand tradition of horror.
Yes.
My problem with horror, because I always say I don't care for horror, is I don't like the visceral, nasty, gory.
Sure.
I can't watch Game of Thrones. I can't read it. I love George Martin's writing. I like George. When he lived in Hoboken, we'd see him all the time. He's been on this radio show. But I prefer your science fiction,
well,
George.
That's...
And also it's fantasy that isn't like visceral gore.
Sure.
But I can't watch that show.
No, I mean, I don't have a problem with gore, and I do like horror in many of its manifestations, although not all of them. But like I said, it was a surprise to me to think of it as horror. I'm very happy that John Joseph Adams and crew felt like it was horror and published it as such, and that the people who make decisions about who gets a Shirley Jackson Award nomination thought that it was horror. It was close enough to horror.
That's a judged award, right? It's not a voted award.
Correct. It has a jury.
Yeah.
Yes, which was a phenomenal jury of wonderful writers, so I was quite happy.
But they're secret until the awards are given out, right? Who the jury is.
It was on the website after the nominations came out.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yes.
After the nominations,
yes.
But before the winners.
Correct, and I met a couple
announced.
Of them at ReaderCon before the awards, and they all...
And who were they?
Kelly Link, for example.
I know her.
And Chesha Burke, both of whom are phenomenal writers.
I know of her.
And so I met both of them and admired them both as writers and chatted with them and had to, like, avert my eyes lest any body language tics make me think that I was getting a hint of failure or winning.
I'm sorry, you just reminded me of a story where two Nebula Awards ago in Washington, D.C., where I knew so many of the nominees, including Genevieve Valentine, who at that time was still doing movie reviews for Hour of the Wolf. Not like Dan's. Dan does the tentpole movies, and Genevieve finds films that you have never heard of.
Right.
I could happily have them both.
Sure.
I wouldn't even say they complement each other. They just have different turf.
Correct.
But all these wonderful people, Jeff Ryman and Delia Sherman and all that up for awards, and I found out, I was interviewing all the nominees. I did at minimum half-hour interview with all the nominees.
Wow.
And 3 hours with Connie Wills, because it's Connie Wills. I've done a total of about 12 hours with Connie Wills, and I'm not bored yet.
Those sound like wonderful hours.
Oh, yeah, they were, let me tell you. So, at any rate, I knew 2 to 3 days beforehand.
That's terrible.
It was awful. It was awful. And I'm interviewing these people, and it's snicker, snicker. I know you're going to win. Oh, my God.
I know you're going to lose.
I know. No. Nobody loses. I hate that. I
Fair
loathe
enough.
That. I despise that. I know that you're not the winner.
Got it.
Because I really do believe, and I was all prepared to say to you, it really is an honor.
No,
to be
it definitely
nominated.
Was. I spent all of ReaderCon on a cloud of happiness and feeling like just for being nominated. And it was interesting because at the previous ReaderCon, it had been my first ReaderCon, and I had made one pro sale. And that was 57 Reasons for the Slate Quarry Suicides, but it hadn't come out yet. No one had read it. No one had heard of me. I had friends and wonderful people who I was happy to spend time with, but I really spent most of my first ReaderCon feeling like, you know, a little person, a no one, a writer who no one knew of. And so to come back a year later as a nominee just made the entire con amazingly happy and wonderful. And
so when you write what you write, my perception is you do not necessarily have goals. Your characters are often gay, but they're not necessarily gay stories. They're not about being gay. They just happen to have
Yeah, sometimes.
Be about gay people.
Sometimes. It depends
sometimes.
On what. It depends on what.
Not always.
Right. Right. You know, it's like anything else. One has a million ideas in one's head at any given moment, and it just depends on which ones start to bounce off of each other and spark and coalesce and come together in a story that compels you and that demands to be written. And so sometimes those have heterosexual...
You sound like a Clarion graduate. I'm sorry, go on. Sometimes...
And I am a Clarion graduate.
I once had a person on this show who was not a Clarion graduate, like once.
I am fully brainwashed and happy to be a member of the Clarion cult. Sometimes that story is narrated by a heterosexual woman, sometimes it's a gay man, sometimes it's someone whose gender is less rigid. Yes, exactly. And sometimes it's a multiple voice protagonist.
I can make a filthy joke and say, rephrase that. But.
Exactly. There are many at
yes.
all times that one could make. So it depends on the story. And sometimes I feel like the character's sexuality is super important to the story that's being told, as I think it was in 57 Reasons for the Slate Quarry Suicides, and sometimes it's just there.
Although, yeah, it was... I think I've heard it described, and may have even been you, that there's a certain amount of a carry thing, C-A-R-R-I-E
correct.
Kind of thing that is compelling... The movement of the story.
Yeah, and
is
Carrie is actually mentioned. One of the 57
That's
reasons
right,
is,
of course
is Carrie.
That's where I got it from.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I think that revenge
narrative. One of the characters says that to the... Can we call him a protagonist?
Yeah, I think he protags pretty well.
Yeah.
Although in terrible ways.
But he's the person we care about and follow.
Yes, I think so. He does mention at one point he's itemizing revenge narratives because he is bullied and he is digging deep into the literary heritage of bullied people who seek a brutal revenge. And his two main touch points are Stephen King's Carrie and Edgar Allan Poe's Hop Frog, which is my favorite
right.
Poe story.
Yes,
and which is a marvelously blood-curdling revenge story. So yes, it's a point of reference for him. And I think that you know, one of the things that excited me about this story that really made me really need to write it was this idea of being bullied and being a teen. And there are reasons, lots of people are bullied for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
And sometimes those reasons have, you know, are completely ridiculous and have no grounding in anything. It's just that, you know, young people are cruel and they'll be cruel to whomever. And if that person is gay, maybe they'll bully them for that. And if it's because they're poor or they're a person of color or any number of
short.
Things that they're short or they just don't like the color of their clothes.
I was short and I was Jewish.
Yeah. So all those things.
Yeah.
And sometimes even reasons that have less grounding in reality than that.
Oh yeah.
So that was what I wanted to do, was tell a revenge story.
I remember I guess I was being a bully without knowing it. It was camp. So I was very young, not just young, but very young. And there was a guy who had a speech impediment. That was enough.
Yeah.
That was enough.
And that's another really interesting point, is that, you know, we construct narratives inside our head where we are generally trying to focus on the things that are good. And we tend to focus more on ourselves as victims of bullying rather than perpetrators of bullying. But in reality, it's rarely that clear cut. And often young people who other people are cruel to can be cruel to other people in turn.
Oh, yeah.
And so just the way you, in the scenario you just described, having been a victim of bullying, but still...
I was a victim of bullying, but I was unwittingly a bully.
Yes. So... part of what I wanted to explore in this story was this idea that even people who are oppressed or marginalized or victimized, in many cases, still have some level of privilege. And that sometimes that privilege exerts itself in ways that cause harm to other people, even if that's not what one wishes.
Yeah.
So Jared's privilege, besides the fact that he's a white person, is that he has a super gnarly, supernatural ability that he can use to reach.
And a really good one, may I say.
Well, thank you.
It's not a trope. It's not a thing that, that's one of the best things to me about the story, is I had not come across the particular ability or power or whatever word one would choose.
In 2014, it's tough to come up with stuff that hasn't been done 1,000 times.
So yeah, especially
that's high praise.
With
I appreciate
X-Men
that.
Running all over the place,
right.
and things like that. This was another one. Chris Claremont, take note.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chris was on the show the day before Days of Future Past.
Wow. That must have been quite a conversation.
Chris has been on the show quite a number of times. He'll be at the next Nursef reading.
Well,
as a matter of fact, he says, at least he responded. Have you met Chris?
I have.
Yes.
Have I met Chris at the event at the Brooklyn Museum?
Oh, that's right, of course.
I don't remember the name of it. It was something about Octavia Butler as part of the Afrofuturist exhibit.
It was basically for women of color discussing the legacy.
Yes.
It was a wonderful thing. My recording of it did not come out.
It was a terrible space.
It was
the worst acoustics for people sitting there. I can only imagine how they were.
But
for
it was a
recording device.
Wonderful event.
It was.
And about 5 minutes before the event is going to start, Beth Fleischer, former editor at ACE and literary agent, and her husband, Chris Claremont, writer of X-Men for 19 years and Marvel Comics editor and all that, are just walking through. And I'm like, it's like, Chris, Beth, it's so cool that you're here. And they're looking like,
where am I?
What's going on? We're here. We're taking a private tour of this new Egyptology exhibit that they've got. And I said, oh, no. You're here for the Octavia Butler tribute. And they passed on. And about 3 minutes later, Chris came back.
That's great.
And sat down and joined in and loved. And by the way, participated during the Q&A, and Beth came back after only half an hour later when the event they were there for was just reminded me of that.
Yes.
So that's where you met Chris.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
I may have introduced you.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
You did.
Because I like showing off my more famous and hero worshipful.
You know a lot of good people.
I do. You among them.
Oh, stop.
Ah, no, seriously.
Well, thank you.
I can say with you, as with others, knew him when. Jen Brissett hadn't sold a story that when she was first on this show, and now she's starting.
No, and has a phenomenal novel forthcoming from Aqueduct Press.
Yeah, Aqueduct Press is way cool.
Yes.
They publish Andrea Hairston. They publish Le Guin.
It's a great house.
It really is. To be picked up by them is very, very, very cool.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people... Genevieve Valentine has been hired to write Catwoman.
Isn't that exciting? I'm not a... I don't dislike comics. I'm just not super knowledgeable about them, but... even I am super excited about that development.
Well, yeah, just because it's her.
Yes.
I mean, I used to read certain Marvel comics just because of the people who wrote them. Like when George Alec Effinger, a gent before your time, was writing various, Harlan Ellison's writing for Marvel Comics. Frederick Pohl.
Wow.
Was adapted into Marvel, and he actually had, like, input and say into the comic of his story that was from Again Dangerous Vision. So actually, it's very good.
That's great.
Very good comics adaptation. It happens. and now Genevieve Valentine for National Comic, DC Comics. Warner Brothers. As opposed to there's Disney and there's Warner Brothers.
That's right. They divide the universe between them.
Well, yeah, when it isn't Google and Apple.
Right. Someday the war, the five-army war will be fought between...
Well, Apple is tied up with Disney, you know, as has been.
Right.
Because, I mean, Pixar, Steve Jobs.
Sure.
And Steve Jobs is on the board at Disney. And had a great deal of influence there. I've always predicted that when people remember Steve Jobs in 100 years, it will be less for Apple and more for Pixar. Because Apple,
may be right.
Apple may have come and gone, or it will have certainly transformed into all the various businesses they get involved in.
Sure.
But Pixar, films like WALL-E, are my favorites, will be remembered and watched the same way that we watch great Lauren Bacall movies today.
Oh, Lauren.
Betty.
So sad.
Betty. Her name's Betty. Lauren's a Hollywood
name. I've adored her my whole life, and
I never
realized she was Jewish.
Yes.
As a
Brooklyn, another Brooklyn Jew.
Yeah, as someone who takes great pride in the proxy... fame of my Jewish brothers and sisters, I was shocked that I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was actually well aware of it. And I'm not sure, but I think she was the last surviving member of the Rat Pack.
Wow.
People, they misstate the Rat Pack. They think that the Rat Pack was Sinatra and Dean Martin. And no, that was the committee. They called themselves the committee. Some newspaper referred to them as Rat Pack. No, the Rat Pack was Bogart, Bacall. I'm trying to remember the others. They were all well-known actors who stood in unity against HUAC.
Wow.
Against the House of Un-American Activities.
Yeah, I knew that.
The Rat Pack was a political organization of famous actors. And Bacall was one of the formers. One of the founders of the Rat Pack, and Dalton Trumbo. Well, of course, he was a victim as well.
Sure.
But they stood with
Trumbo. John Garfield, I think.
Yes.
I think was in that
was
mix.
A member of the Rat Pack. Yeah, absolutely. And possibly Paul Muni?
That would make sense.
Not sure. I'm just thinking, as you mentioned, that all these Jews.
Yeah, well.
People forget John Garfield.
Right.
And Peter Lorre wasn't a member of the Rat Pack, but he was an Austrian Jew.
Right.
No. Anyway, and Betty, I forget her real name, but wasn't Lauren Bacall.
No, it was not.
I just
saw it listed somewhere.
Unrelated trivia question. I like to throw at people.
Okay.
Stuart Granger's real name. He had to change it to Stuart Granger because his real name was taken.
I don't know.
James Stewart.
Fascinating.
Poor man.
Fascinating. Is that...
And James Stewart's name wasn't James Stewart.
Do you mean Farley Granger?
No, Stuart Granger.
I don't know who Stuart Granger is. I'm sorry.
Oh! Second version of The Prisoner of Zenda.
Oh, okay.
You're such a movie knowledgeable
person. I am a movie buff, and I'm so
excited. Oh, here. King Solomon's Mines.
Okay. Familiar with it.
Alan Quartermain, he's the lead.
Okay.
That's Stuart Granger.
I'm a big fan of Farley Granger. I don't know Stuart Granger.
Farley Granger's worthy as well. Very different kinds of movies, and I don't think... Well, they weren't related, because Stuart Granger's real name is James Stewart.
Yes, and Farley Granger, his best role, in my opinion, was Rope with James Stewart.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, so there's that little circle
sure.
going on
where
there.
James Stewart did not know until the movie was finished shooting that he was playing a gay guy.
Right.
That all three of the main characters in that movie are gay, although yeah. of course it's not said in the movie.
Yeah, well of course the semi-real life
Leopold and Loeb.
Leopold
inspiration.
And Loeb, yeah. We're gay.
Yeah.
And which was
Well, Rope is a hell of a movie.
It really is. It really is. I've never seen the play. It's just the filming of the play.
Oh, I've never seen the play either.
Part. My understanding is, like, Wait Until Dark, they didn't change a whole lot.
Sure, sure.
Although I saw Wait Until Dark on Broadway. I saw it both in its original run and its revival.
The refrigerator scene must have been much more terrifying.
They
turned out
even the exit lights for that. They posted an usher at every exit light just in case. But for the last half hour of the play, they turned out every light in the theater. And Lee Remick and Robert Duvall.
Oh, in the stage version?
On the Broadway show by Frederick Knott. Same man who wrote Dial M for Murder.
Right.
Yeah, I saw that at a young... my brother took me at a young age. I was sitting front row balcony. I almost went over the balcony during the refrigerator scene. It's an amazing moment. And the movie, for all of its being a movie and not theater, is still... Alan Arkin and Audrey Hepburn, still pretty good.
No, they're phenomenal. And it does capture that sort of intense... not paranoia, but the claustrophobia of theater, of a very limited space.
It really does. It really does. Except when they open it up for Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., his character just does not belong.
Yeah,
he's not in the play.
I hate when they open up. There's always the obligatory outside scene.
It was okay during the credits when you see the woman holding the doll. That's fine.
Right.
That's really not a spoiler or a giveaway
or anything. Sure, sure, sure.
And it's the credits.
Right.
But they added lines to, we were talking about this off air. They turned her, they almost Trinity-ized her. After this woman's had this horrible experience of coming yay close to being murdered. And then the husband doesn't go run over to comfort her. He says, no, let her come to me. And everybody I saw it in the theater, everybody was hissing and booing. This does not happen in the Broadway show.
Good.
I then saw it years later with Marissa Tomei and Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, that sounds horrifying.
Harry wrote.
That sounds horrifying.
And yeah, doesn't it? And you know what? They were good.
I would see it for her. I don't know.
Yeah, you can't imagine. He was very... I was expecting to loathe
sure.
him. I really was. He was excellent. He was excellent.
I would
take
your word for it.
She did not surprise me. She was no Lee Remick or Audrey Hepburn, but she held her own. But Tarantino was shockingly good. The problem was the production was no good.
Okay.
They modernized it. They brought it into a modern Soho loft with fluorescent lighting and stuff like that. And it, the 60s Greenwich Village setting really gave it. So I'm chatting like we've got lots of time, but in fact, it's already 2:22. How long is your reading?
Oh, I could go on and on. I have the story that I'm reading is it's called Boy on the Rocks. It's going to be in the September issue of Lightspeed, and it's a long.
Are they doing a podcast?
I don't know.
I was not aware that they
were doing one of the other story, and I was shocked and delighted. So I don't know what the status is.
See, there's about two stories a week, and one of the two are podcast.
Well, we shall see. So anyway, the story is long. I brought about half of it, but it's still possibly too long. So I could just read until you slap me.
Would you rather talk?
I'm happy to talk.
Okay, let's
it's
talk.
It's your call. You're the
let's
boss.
Talk. Yeah, we will tell listeners that for now, A, your website is?
SamJMiller.com.
Sam J. Miller. That's, I don't have to spell it. And there you will find links to the podcast and to several online stories.
Yes.
And I have to say, if you have any issues, get over it. Just read the bleeping story. In fact, if you have issues, read the bleeping story.
Thank you.
Your fiction is it resembles Mr. Bose's. Rick Bose.
High praise.
Yeah, it is.
He's a bloody genius.
He is not recognized enough. He's won a few awards, Lambda Award, World Fantasy
Currently
Award.
Nominated for a World Fantasy
yes.
Award for that phenomenal novel, Dust Devil on a Quiet Street.
It's a fix-up. I mean, it's nothing he hasn't said on this show three or four times. He's my favorite go-to guest, by the
he's
way.
He's a good guest.
He is. He is. He's actually been on this show, we figure, more than 20 times.
Wow.
I've known him a while.
Yes. No, he's wonderful, and I'm really privileged to be in Altered Fluid, which is a writer's group that he is part of that tons of great writers include.
He's in
him.
The two main New York writer's groups. He's in both Altered Fluid and Tabula Rasa.
Yes.
Formerly known as the 8th of February.
Well, they are both
which
wonderful.
Which is Jules Verne's birthday. That's where they got the name from.
Well, there's many good writers' birthdays in February. Mine is the 7th.
Oh, okay. Ooh, so you're a day off from Jules.
I am, and I'm Charles Dickens, so I'll take that.
Ooh, are you really?
Yes, and Sinclair Lewis, who I have not read, so I can't speak to.
I have. I'd rather read Dickens.
Yes,
but,
or Jules Verne.
No spontaneous combustion, though.
No. No, the Tabula Rasa and Altered Fluid.
I always had a problem with that scene in Bleak House. Sorry, Tabula Rasa.
Tabula Rasa and Altered Fluid are both phenomenal writers' groups.
They are.
Full of many wonderful writers, including Rick.
Both of whom have been represented on at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. But Altered Fluid used to be a regular part of this radio
well,
show.
Well, I've heard that, and I'm very eager to...
We need to do that.
Oh,
maybe you can help drive this.
I'll get on the
since
phone.
Since you're a member, yes.
Yes,
get on the phone, get on the email. I'm not a member. I can't write the email.
I
can't
write
email the group of Matt and Paul and Tempest and on and on and on. Nora, anything... become of her. Oh, that's right. She changed her name to N.K. Jemisin, became one of the best writers out there.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
And got back from teaching Clary in 2014.
Did she?
Yes.
I will not. Nora, if you're listening, turn off the podcast or the radio. She is, to me, the most likely successor to Octavia Butler. In terms of the quality of her writing, being a woman of color, writing stuff that matters, and so on and so forth. Okay, Nora, you can turn your radio back on now, and it's high time you did the show again, damn it.
So, yes, there are many phenomenal writers in Altered Fluid. And
in your stuff reading.
And it would be tons of fun to do an Hour of the Wolf Altered Fluid reading.
Yeah, I mean, what we do is we actually replicate an Altered Fluid meet, which is where everybody will have read a short story by a member, and the different, and then everybody gets 2.5 or 3 minutes, depending on how many members of Altered Fluid are around and how long my show is, to do what they call crits, short for critiques. And we have actually done this thing. Now, we don't have the room in our current studios or enough mics, but that's okay. I've got the equipment to go remote. And we've done that once. But the person whose office we did it in no longer works in that office. David Mercurio Rivera has switched jobs since.
I also, don't want to get more. Also a bloody genius.
Wonderful.
Phenomenal writer.
You like short stories? David Mercurio Rivera. He is holding the torch for Terry Bisson, I would say. And I think he would like hearing that. Yeah. And Terry, I believe that Bisson was one of the his teachings were one
correct.
Of the things that helped create altered fluid.
That's correct, yep.
Yeah. And he was one of the first curators of the KGB Fantastic Fiction series. Although, people forget, well, yes, it was Terry and Alice Turner, but Mark Jacobson was the one who started the whole thing. All the readings at KGB were because of Mark Jacobson, who was at the Lucius Shepard event.
Which was very unfortunately scheduled for Father's Day, so I was out of town and wasn't able to attend, although many wonderful people, including Jeff Ford, were there.
And I filmed it, and I gave the film to Rob Kilheffer, and what happens, I mean, it was mainly filmed for Lucius's family.
Sure.
But I, of course, have the recording, and we shall see if I can use it, but I will need permissions of people.
Sure.
But Mark was there, and I hadn't seen him in a while. He had been on this show once, and this is before he basically created the girlfriend experience for Steven Soderbergh, which, yes, he did.
Wow.
And he's in the movie with Sasha Grey, a porn star.
Wow.
I must have enjoyed, well, the company of Steven Soderbergh and Sasha Grey. Quite an entourage.
Yeah.
And he asked how things were at BAI, and I told him, and he said, do you know a guy there named Lister? Who, by the way, will be on the air in half an hour. And I said, well, sure, he follows me. He said, oh, he's been my friend for like 40 years. So, Mark, Lister, what we have to do is we get Mark here for Hour of the Wolf, and then just he stays through for Burn Baby Burn Clappers.
Nice.
So we can have the same guest. So what we do with Altered Fluid is, instead of everybody having just read the story, we have the author read the story. Usually it's been live on the air.
That's great.
Now, yeah, I mean, I cannot think of a more terrifying experience for a writer. Although I'm the one who subjected them to it, to A, read a story on the air, and then B, have it critiqued. And not necessarily always, I mean, there's no, my God, that was awful. Although we have had on the air, I'm leaving out the name, how could you do such and such? That is such a trope. You must get, and we've actually had that on the air.
Well,
and not from Tempest either.
Well, it's funny because I can see how that would be a terrifying process for a writer, but I don't know if I'm just a masochist when it comes to writing, but I actually really like the critique and workshop experience, including when the feedback
is critical. No, absolutely, but live on the air.
I love it. I can see that it would be terrifying.
And then listener phone calls after that. It's like, oh my, and yet they have all, we've done like 7 or 8 so far. And now we probably have to record them somewhere.
Sure.
But I know where to record them. At the Commons. At 388 Atlantic Avenue.
A lovely space.
Where WBAI's managerial offices, and not our broadcast studios, are on the 3rd floor. And where the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, I have to start plugging.
Yes, you do.
Well, I don't think we're going to have too much trouble filling the space.
No, it's quite a bill.
Paul DiFilippo, who is a controversial and fun and interesting and bizarre writer, but the first person who was booked, actually, was Walter Mosley.
His
second time reading for us, when Cherie Renee Thomas was curator of the reading series, she brought him in.
Great.
And Cherie, where are you? She's been on the show many times. She's wonderful. Anyway, and I've worked with her for 2 years, and, you know, yeah, she brought in people like Walter Mosley. So Walter Mosley, I'm sorry, but at ReaderCon, I'm boasting to people, and they say, oh, who are you going to have, Walter Mosley? Are you going to have Nora? No. How about Chip Delaney? No. Excuse me. Is this box, like, 3 feet big?
Right.
It's like, because I have a great black writer, I've got to team him with another great black writer. Not going to do it. Delaney is in April. Nora, I hope you're listening. Your time is coming. It's been 2 years since you've done a reading for us. And, you know, I'm sorry. I know you work for a living, but you're one of the great science fiction writers out there. We want
Amen.
You. We need you. So I just refuse to do it. I'm not going to box them together. So then I said, oh, you want a box? I give you a box. And I created, very pleased with myself for this. Walter Mosley is a mystery writer who writes science fiction. Well, Paul DiFilippo is a science fiction writer who writes mysteries. I found the box.
That's a good box.
Screw everybody. No, I was really PO'd at people on Facebook and people at ReaderCon who just immediately assumed. I mean, yeah, I often do themes. I often sure. get couples. Or have, you know, two people of opposing or
complementary.
It's
the curatorial privilege and flair of bringing
fun.
Together good folks in unexpected ways.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly.
So the expected ways, I can see how that would be less interesting to you of person,
not only
person who checks off this box, person, other person who checks off.
Yeah,
this
but
box.
I actually, I haven't told this story in the air before, but I actually found that offensive. I actually found that offensive. The idea, it's like, oh, you're going to have this gay writer, you're going to have that gay writer. Well, A, maybe if it was in June, and if we labeled it as a, we're going to get into this conversation again, queer event. A word that I am still uncomfortable with for generational reasons.
Yes.
We had this conversation on the air. It was a very good one.
Yes. No, I totally, I mean, I understand why lots of folks, including lots of LGBT folks, don't feel comfortable using that word. And sometimes I have to watch my use of it, because I feel like for folks my age and younger, often it's embraced as a all-inclusive word for all the wonderful variations of queerness, whether it's being gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgender, intersex.
Understood
whatever.
That we need something better than BLT or whatever, LGBTRQ,
sure.
whatever. Somebody told me a word and I've forgotten
it. Is it quilt bag?
Yeah, was it.
I'm fond of quilt bags.
I like that one.
Yes, although, again, but that's the one I have to be careful with because no one knows, unfortunately.
Yeah, you have to Google it.
What the heck I'm talking about when I say it.
On the other hand, it's a great icebreaker.
It is. It is.
Saying, are you a quilt bag person?
Yes.
You know, some of my best friends are quilt bags.
It's the modern version of Friends of Dorothy, right? The code phrase that one uses so as to be discreet about one's identification.
Yes, exactly. I like quilt bag. It's fun.
It is fun. It conjures up a happy image. I just picture a bag made out of quilt.
That's why I've always liked the word gay.
Yes.
Because gay, happy, yes.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I'm very happy.
I've noticed that, where so many of my gay friends are like, oh, I'm so depressed. You folks... No. Those of my friends, it's not you, it's not Rick, it certainly isn't Delia and Ellen.
No. I maintain that being gay is a superpower, and that far from a nightmare affliction or a problem to be fixed, being queer gives one all sorts of wonderful privileges and powers and insight into the hidden structure of the world.
Yeah, so. just to explain to listeners, my problem with the phrase is I grew up in a neighborhood which in an area which is now, in fact, very identified as openly gay, wonderful place. A particular 37th Road in Jackson Heights. I grew up in Jackson Heights. And when I was young, it was called Queer Alley.
Wow.
There was, and this was derogatory, and I would hear people of my own age. It's like, well, what do you want to do tonight? You know, sort of like, well, I don't know. What do you want to do tonight, Marty? And some of them said, well, we could go over to Queer Alley and roll some...
I get that the word has extremely ugly connotations and history.
It's to me, the sexual equivalent of the N-word. It is as bad to me as what the British would call a cigarette.
Yes.
A faggot.
Yes.
Which to me is kindling fire or something like that. Right. It's an... To me, I grew up with hearing it only in offensive and often with that, the call for violence.
Sure.
So that's inbred in me.
Yes.
So that's why I say it's generational because, and I'm not sure how comfortable I am with people, quote, reclaiming words as... a writer for the Village Voice, Donna Minkowitz, would put it.
Yeah.
Reclaiming.
I think it's up to... I think reclaiming is important. And for many people, that's a way of dealing with history and oppression and the exact types of horrible situations that you're describing. But it's important, if that's what one wants to do in order to make sense of the oppression one faces, one must understand that other people might not think the same way.
But you see, that's exactly why I say it's a generational thing, because that's a way of thinking that people could not have come to unless they were born into a world that had somewhat changed from the one I was born into.
That's right.
It is literally generational.
Yes.
And you were doing a queer science fiction reading at Blue Stockings, and I used the phrase to promote it because that's what it was called, and you said, and I really appreciated this then, it stayed with me, thank you for stepping out of your comfort zone, Jim. And that was like exactly the right thing to say.
Good. No, I do appreciate that, and it is something that...
Because that's what...
Like you say, it's a generational thing. There's tons of words.
And it's a comfort zone issue.
Right.
Because of the generational thing.
No, there's tons of words that I use, including curse words, for example, that I'm perfectly comfortable with, that I sometimes forget not everyone is comfortable with. And sometimes I'll say them and see someone flinch and realize, oh, right, I might have just hurt someone's feelings or made them uncomfortable or made them think of something they didn't want to think of.
Yeah.
So language comes with, you know, responsibility and it has power.
Yeah, with bad language comes great.
With words that some people have unpleasant
associations with. Exactly.
One must be mindful.
And to me, queer was one of them and remains that way. Uncomfortable watching Richard Pryor routines.
Yeah.
It's one thing for Mark Twain, and it's another thing for even Richard Pryor to use that word.
Yes. Yes, and maybe the next reading will be a quilt bag science fiction and fantasy.
Damn
reading.
Straight. Also, when I think of the word quilt, I think of the AIDS quilt.
Yeah.
There is that association for me, and that's a very, very positive thing. Yeah, you're wondering why I'm glancing at the monitor to see if Lister is coming down the hall anytime soon.
Okay.
He's often here by now. It's 2:42 in New York.
I've noticed him in my previous visits to Hour of the Wolf.
Yeah.
I've noticed him arrive.
Yeah, he comes in and he plays
stretching,
audience.
Do some stretching exercises.
And especially when I've had Rick on. He loves to come in and just sit there listening to Rick Reed.
Fascinating.
As who wouldn't?
But, of course.
But Lister gets to play in-person audience.
Nice.
And he has a long way to come, long way to travel to get here, so I worry when I don't see him by a certain hour if he is going to make it. So that's why I keep looking at the monitors. This is we're at CCNY up in Harlem, and CCNY is a highly monitored environment.
Yes.
It feels like you're in London or something.
Yes. What I've heard is that this building was designed by prison architects so as to be so as to frustrate student uprisings.
I something tells me that's apocryphal.
It might be, but the architecture of the space...
And there have been enough student uprightings in this building.
That's true, but the architecture of this space is very bizarre and disorienting.
Well, also, we're in a previously uninhabited part of the building, those part of the services like janitorial and whatnot part of the building where... Yeah, but if you go up to where the students go, into the upper floors, actually, it's perfectly simple and easy.
Although there are a lot of weird doors in the middle of the hallway. I used to co-teach a class upstairs in this building.
Ah, okay, so you know the space better than I do.
Yeah, and it is strange. It is a little strange, but again, that the story could be apocryphal about the architectural origins of the
space. Yeah, I would think so. It sounds like one of... those stories,
sure.
Which always take the... I mean, why would a college, you know, it's like, you know, this is where, this is fairly liberal college, and it was created to be a people's college. It didn't have, it was free tuition.
Yes.
Until... a certain year, and still very, very low.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tuition. It's not free, but it's very low.
Right.
And therefore, so...
well, as liberal as it is now, as then, I'm sure there have been issues with student organizations and
oh, there was a major campus issue in this building.
I know.
In this year.
Yeah. So I imagine that that it is not new that the administration is not always on the same page as student groups.
Yeah, and on some of the ones that I've heard about, I'd side with the administration. On other ones, I'd be there with the students. Really depends on the issue. I have to listen to issues before I decide.
It's a good policy.
Unlike some of my colleagues, but oops, no, I didn't say that. By the way, I was going to say, if you'd like to speak to Sam J. Miller, you can call 212-209-2900, but I see somebody is already doing it.
Should I be afraid?
Yeah, be very afraid. Put on your headphones. Anyhow, I'm pretty sure I know who the caller will be. Let's see if I'm right. Whoops. Hi there, you're on the radio. Whoops. No, No, your feedback.
Eerie.
Yeah, it's a very... No, that's not a good thing.
No.
And it's not somebody with their radio on, and we're hearing their radio because we're on delay.
Right.
So if we heard their radio, we would just hear us from 5 seconds earlier, which is... that's truly eerie. Ah, there he is! 1 second. Excuse me while I go and Lister in, because... the door is locked. Good morning. We were talking about you. You snuck in without my seeing you on the monitors. So we know that Burn Baby Burn Clappers will be on our air. Lister, you've met Sam J. Miller before.
Good. Nice to see you. So,
yes. And whoops. This boy, don't lean back on this chair, Lister. And good morning. Hopefully you're on the air.
Wait till you're 70, James. Just wait till you're 70.
That's only 10 years from now, Robert. And I was right as to who the caller was.
Ah, now, you only have 15 years to wait, by the way, before the TSA will not let you have to take off your hat or your belt or your shoes anymore. I only have 5 years to wait. Good luck.
What is the TSA?
Oh, the Transportation Authority, you know, that makes all the rules at airports. For security purposes.
Oh, okay, them.
Yeah,
I
them.
Mean, there are too many TLAs.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the TLA is.
TLA is a three-letter acronym.
So, Mr. Miller, you teach at our favorite spot down there? Because I know that facility quite well.
I co-taught a class a couple years ago.
Can I ask what it was?
It was around housing policy.
It was what?
Around housing policy. I am a community organizer with a group that does a lot of work around housing.
I know the space quite well where James is. I taught there for 25 years.
Yeah, Sam is officially a community organizer, specializing in homeless.
Yeah, I work for an organization that was founded and is led by homeless folks, and so we organize people who are experiencing homelessness to fight for changes in city policy around issues of policing and housing.
By the way, can you tell me, please, the name of your story, I heard 57 ways, and then I heard missed the rest.
57 reasons.
Reasons.
57 reasons for the Slate Quarry suicides.
Does that, now, I'm very curious. I would love someday to have a chat with you on revenge literature, because I've been doing a, I'm going to be doing a panel at the American Folklore Society annual this year on revenge literature in folk and fairy tales.
Fascinating.
And I'm curious as to some literature you could recommend to me. Hopfrog, by the way, I totally agree with you, is the best poem story.
It's magnificent.
Written.
It's a magnificent...
Absolutely. That revenge that the dwarf takes is just so spiffy.
Yes. It's deeply satisfying.
By the way, spiffy is a good word.
Yes. Marvy.
Nah.
Well, no, you used it, James, when you said you had a Marvy time at ReaderCon.
Yeah, but you see, that's a different context.
Oh, okay. By the way,
the Poe story isn't Marvy, it's Spiffy.
Okay. One of the Isle of Spiffy. Thank you for mentioning
it's
two
keen.
Of my favorite actors. Stuart Granger, I think his version of Prisoner of Zenda to me was much better because it had James Mason as Rupert.
Oh, Henslow. Yeah, but come on, Ronald Coleman.
Yeah, I know. I can't even remember who played Rupert Henslow in his version.
Oh, God. I don't know, but I mean, C. Aubrey
Smith. Oh, I love
Smith.
C.
Is in that film.
C. Aubrey Smith always reminded me
but
of
my
him.
Favorite version of The Prisoner of Zenda is in The Great Race.
Really?
Yeah, it's 45 minutes for some reason, for unknown reasons, all of a sudden, Jack Lemmon, Peter Falk, and Natalie Wood, and Keenan Wynn end up doing The Prisoner of Zenda with also the world's best pie throwing, directed by Blake Edwards.
That's a bold statement. I feel like Buster Keaton and Fatty Arbuckle really like corner the market on pie throwing.
Now you mentioned
expertise.
Before I get off the phone, one other thank you for mentioning James Stewart. James Stewart to me could do no wrong. However, when I think of James Stewart,
oh no, well, how about another thin man?
Well, no, no. Well, I don't know about that. No, to me the best. I mean, when I think
he
of
did musicals. No, he did.
Oh, he did a lot of great stuff.
No, no, that's bad stuff.
But well, no, no, well,
by his own reckoning.
Well, you know where my tastes are, James. I loved him in Winchester '73.
Oh yeah, that's 30 years after he did. When his studio under contract.
I loved him in The Andersons. I still think his best performance was opposite Lee Marvin in John Ford's last movie.
I'm not going to fight on that one.
I love Liv.
The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is of the people who give it 4 stars are still underrating that film.
I adore that movie.
That's a great. And John Wayne. That's not to me John Wayne, one of John Wayne's best movies. Forget that. Yeah, I'm talking. About
it is one of his best movies.
I know. I like the Cavalry trilogy, but that's debatable.
It gets at the darkness of John Wayne, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
That and The Searchers really.
Oh, The Searchers.
Really, really get it.
Isn't it interesting, Sam, Mr. Miller? Well,
call
you Sam?
Please.
Isn't it interesting, Sam, that they've never done a reboot, and never done a remake of The Searchers?
Oh,
I wonder.
Now that you've said it, they probably will.
Shut up, Robert.
No, please.
No. Take that back.
I take it back.
Rewind. I should hit the delay button.
No. Why?
Because somebody will hear and go, oh, what a great idea.
What's interesting is I don't think they could, because one of the things that makes that movie so amazing is it's really about John Wayne's racism.
Yeah, but
and they did True
that
Grit.
That wouldn't stop them. They would just not get the point of it.
No, that's true.
They'd screw it up.
Well, they did True Grit. Which, didn't you tell me you liked better than the original?
No, I didn't like it better. I liked it equally.
Equally.
I was shocked to discover that, well, it's the Coens, and they're usually very good. I was shocked to discover that they did, actually, what it is their version is closer to the Charles Portis novel
in a few
ways. And the Charles Portis novel, which I've read about 8 times, really is a satire.
It is?
And you need to read it. And the Coen brothers gave it that slight satirical touch. But having said that, I adore, despite Glenn Campbell, I adore the original film.
I like it, too, and I certainly like it better than Rooster Cogburn.
But, you know, Rooster Cogburn, don't you want to be a fly on the wall with the conversations between John Wayne and Katharine Hepburn discussing politics? Don't you want to be? And they got along famously.
Fascinating.
Well, they did?
Yes, they did.
To me, her role in that, well, of course, it obviously isn't Lion in Winter, but then what is? Yeah. All right. Anyway, I have a feeling your time
films.
Is coming up. So anyway,
yeah,
Sam, when is this 57 Reasons for coming out?
It actually came out last year. It's available online. You can Google it.
Lightspeedmagazine.com. Go to samjmiller.com and look for the podcast, and you'll hear a reading by Paul Baymer, famed for Star Trek.
Ooh.
And I'm editing him as soon as I get home.
Yes.
I've forgotten what story, but it's the next nightmare story. And I have once every 2 weeks, I have both a nightmare story and a lightspeed story. The lightspeed story I'm doing second because it's only 9 pages long, but the Paul Baymer reading.
One last quick question, Sam. Will you be at one of the upcoming Nursif readings? If you are, I would love to talk about revenge fiction.
I'm always happy to talk about revenge fiction. It is my
and
plan.
Revenge folk and fairy tales, too, because I have a whole list for you if you're interested.
Yeah, I'm hoping to be there. I'm hoping to be at the
for
next
the ninth for the Walter Mosley.
I'm going to try. Yeah.
If you do, come and find me.
Sounds good.
Take care. Peace
Thanks.
And love.
Take care.
Take care. Okay, and Robert was right, and I wasn't looking at the clock, but we have 2 minutes left.
Oh my goodness, what are we going to do with ourselves?
A, rephrase that. B, no, especially with Lister in the room, he just joined. But promote yourself while I cue up the outro.
Sounds good. So I have a story coming out from Lightspeed in September that I'm super excited about called Boy on the Rocks. I think it might be the best thing I've ever done. But that's not for me to say.
Given that you just won the Shirley Jackson Award.
You know. So I also have a story that just came out from Shimmer called Allosaurus Burgers that I'm really happy about. And I have a story coming out in Stories coming out in Interzone, Beneath Ceaseless Skies, and Strange Horizons between now and the end of the year.
All of them, yeah. Good venues.
So it's a busy year for stuff coming out for me.
It's a difficult profession because you have to start, as Octavia Butler used to teach, you have to start with the concept of rejection.
Yes.
That was something that she always dealt with in her... So, pardon me, I still have to somehow find and cue up my outro here. So, tell people where to find you.
So, I'm online. I'm samjmiller.com. I have links to dozens of published stories of mine. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter name is SentenceBender. I'm on Tumblr, which is also SentenceBender.
I like that one.
Sam J. Miller was taken, and I'm happy because I ended up with Sentence Bender, which I like a lot more and is a lot more fun. So if you want to find out the things that I'm really obsessed with, you should check me out on Twitter and Tumblr.
Yeah, I was lucky. I carved out my virtual space online long before most people.
You're an early adopter.
I'm actually... Oh, stop it! I would actually say that I'm an early creator.
There you go.
I helped... I helped develop what... I was working with Tim Berners-Lee, who created the World Wide Web. So
you're to blame for all this stuff.
No, Tim Berners-Lee is,
okay.
But I was a beta tester.
Got it.
Before,
so it would have been worse, is what you're saying, without your...
Well, actually, yes, because at the time I represented both Ziff Davis and Citibank, and we would have owned what became the World Wide Web, and that's absolutely true.
That's a
but because they
dystopian
let it,
scenario
they
right
They let
there.
It lapse. The thing that we built was sold to AT&T. They renamed it to Interchange, and they never did anything with it. So first, we were going to run it. Second, AT&T was going to run it. And then Tim Berners-Lee put it into the public domain. And that's...
Lucky thing for us.
Yes, absolutely. And now he's Sir Tim, and people still don't know who this guy is. All he did was invent and create the web and the HTTP
I thought
protocol.
That was Al Gore.
You see, that's what everybody
no, I know it
says.
Wasn't Al Gore,
I know. It's there.
That's the story. But again, that's the apocryphal story.
That's the apocryphal story. Well, he popularized it. There is that. Anyway.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And we'll do this again.
I'm looking forward to it.
Hopefully get you to another Nearsif reading.
Preferably not while a polar vortex is happening.
Right.
You know? I mean, I'm always happy.
Oh, my God. That was one of the coldest days. And yet we had a nice turnout.
That's how you know who loves me and you, because people showed up.
Yeah, we had a good audience for that.
Horrific cold.
We had a nice audience for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I will be back next week. I'm not sure of the agenda. Week after next, I will have Veronica Shaness, another award winner.
Shirley Jackson award winning author.
And hopefully accompanying her as Genevieve Valentine.
Amazing. I'll be listening.
Okay. So thank you all for listening and stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers with Lister coming your way in just a minute.
Let's find the people who hate this shit. These are the places we'll hit. Panama, talking about Peru. Azania, Brixton, Belfast, can't forget Korea. Beirut, can't forget Haiti. Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talk about Uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all. And Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami. Do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville. Boogie down, South Bronx, yeah. My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home of the brave, land of the free. Boom! This is the home of the slave. Now hold on, just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I touch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Girl, I tell you, say your body dead. Girl, I tell you, say your body dead. Girl, I tell you, say your body dead. Man in your house, say, he man the real thing. Man, I tell you, say, he man look a quick thing. Girl, I tell you, say, you not in a fear ring. You not ready, cause she want a big sting. Body dead, oh, body dead, oh. Body dead, oh, body dead, oh. Stinging, not in ding, why, standing, ding, why. Body dead oh, 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 body dead oh.
Gyal, I tell you say your body dead. 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 Man, the real thing. Man, I tell you, say, he man look a quick thing. Girl, I tell you, say, you not in a fear ring. You not ready, cause she want a big sting. Body dead, oh, body dead, oh. Body dead, oh, body dead, oh. Stinging that ending, ding, why, standing, ding, why. Body dead, oh, body dead, oh. Body dead, oh, body dead, oh. Body dead, oh, body dead, oh. Body dead, oh.
Gyal, I tell you, say your body dead. 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 Miss Hot Girl wanna wine, says she want it steady and ready. She no want no lazy body. She no want no broke down smaddy. Put your foot on the clutch, gas the pedal, make the engine run for me. She no want no lame donkey. If you're looking sad, if you're looking mad, she no really business if you're looking bad. No want no romance up, no want no romance down.
Children, I call you a living clown. Body dead, oh, 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 body dead, oh.
Gyal, I tell you, say your body dead. 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 Gyal, I tell you, say your body dead.
First things first, I'm the realest.
Realest.
Drop this and let the whole world feel it.
Let them feel it.
And I'm still in the murder business. I can hold you down like I'm giving lessons in physics.
Right, right.
You should want a bad bitch like this.
Huh?
Drop it low and pick it up just like this.
Yeah.
Cup of Ace, cup of Goose, cup of Chris. I heal something worth a half a ticket on my wrist.
Back. On my wrist.
Taking all the liquor straight. Never chase that.
Never.
Stop like we bring an 88 back.
What?
Bring the hooks in where the bass at. Champagne spilling, you should taste that.
You already know I'm in the fast lane. From LA to Tokyo, I'm so fancy. Can't you taste this gold? Remember my name. Oh, 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 oh.
I said, baby, I do this. I thought that you knew this. Can't stand no haters and honest. The truth is, and my flow retarded. HB did departed. Swagger on stupid. I can't shop in no department to get my money. Money decline. That's what I meant. That's so much to get that line of rewind. To get my money on time. If it's about money decline, I just can't worry about no haters. Gotta stay on my grind. Now tell me who that, who that? They do that, do that. Put that paper over all. I thought you knew that. I be the IGGY. Put my name in bold. I've been working. I'm up in here with some change to throw.
I'm so fancy. You are.
How you love that? Got the whole world asking how I love
it. Like
hot girl, hands off, don't touch that. Look at it, I bet you wishing you could clutch
we
that.
Like this.
That's just the way you like it, huh? It's so good, he just wishing he could
we
buy
like
it.
This.
Never turn down nothing. Slaying these hoes, go trigger on it.
We like this.